Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Computer Weekly Downtime Upload Podcast. I'm Cliff Saron and my guest today is Nada Henne, who is an analyst at Gartner. And the topic of the conversation, Nada, is AI and security, which is incredibly broad. So, I mean, what I wanted to ask you is, what is Gartner hearing from the people you speak to, the clients?
Over the last 2 years, the discussion has been very varied. We speak to CIOs, we speak to CISOs, we speak to business leaders, people in sales, people in marketing who want to use AI and have either heard anecdotally about security concerns or have actual security concerns they're looking at and they want to validate what other organizations are seeing and how they're dealing with them. And it's been interesting because it's been a roller coaster. At the very beginning, we see clients asking questions about basic AI knowledge. And that starts with explaining what is AI, how does it work, and all of those details. And in many instances, a lot of our clients realize that their issues aren't really AI security issues. They're more associated with AI, or they surface because we're using this AI function that's surfacing an existing problem, that's amplifying an existing problem. And that is, I would say, 50% of those conversations.
Yes.
It's not an AI security problem. It's an access control problem.
Yes.
If you give an AI system access to data that it shouldn't have access to, and it leaks information to people that it shouldn't leak to those people, it's not really an AI problem. It's that you've given the AI system data it shouldn't have access to. It's not magic. And a lot of the time, the work to clean up the data to make it quote unquote AI ready is the larger part of the job.
So there is a question of data leakage, and you just referenced that. Is that as big a concern, in AI, or is it just, as you say, it's just part of what you should be doing because you have an IT security policy that should prevent corporate data from leaking?
It is arguably the largest concern. And there's two sides of it. There's the internal data leakage. A lot of people call that the oversharing thing, when you ask the model a question and it gives you internally to an internal user information that it shouldn't give you. And then there's the external aspect where you're engaging with this model and then if your information starts to show up elsewhere.
Okay.
In both of those instances, it's primarily a fault in the kind of data you've given the model initially, or in the guardrails you set up for the AI system.
Okay.
Because it's not magic. The AI system does not have access to data that it shouldn't have access to. It gets complicated when you're trying to overlay access control on top of an AI system. That gets messy because AI systems are not built the same way other systems are. They are probabilistic. They work off of probability. They look at a lot of information, especially with generative, and they try to give you a well-rounded answer using a lot of bits and pieces of information. Now, if it's got 8 bits of information and you only wanted to use 5 for that particular individual, given their access control limitations, programming that can be challenging.
Yes.
But it's all predicated on the fact that your access control functionality and rules are well in place.
Yes.
Before you ever bring in AI. For a lot of organizations, their data is just not AI ready.
Yeah, I mean, that just as an aside, that does make it more complicated to train the model to understand certain users, because if the model is trained on all the data that it has access to in the corporate space for everyone, then there is a risk that it would give out the wrong information. The alternative is to have different models for different groups of users, right? And that could be incredibly expensive to build and and to manage.
It's incredibly expensive and it's incredibly complex. But it also might be the way forward for a lot of cases. Right now, it's very expensive. So yes. You can't have a large language model and grounding data dedicated for each and every person. It would be too expensive. But if small language models are potentially the path forward, then the processing power and the hardware requirements for small language models dedicated to individuals, built for individuals, tuned to an individual's requirements, become much more interesting and much more attractive.
Okay.
Obviously, those start, then we start to have economic aspects associated with it. So NVIDIA, for example, is pushing H100s and heavy hardware, but then small language models doesn't need any of that stuff. We have to start balancing these things out.
One of the things that I've been writing about and Computer Weekly's been covering is the idea that a generative AI model can be influenced by information that it is put into it, and it incorporates that information, because you know some of these things are, it might be taking it from the web, but it may also be integrated into, say, it's reading your email, and messages in the email messages may contain information that influences the how the model and adapts how the model works. I think that is called prompt injection. That's the term that the industry is using, prompt injection. I mean, are you seeing this as a big risk at the moment, or is it something that could potentially be a big risk going forward?
Prompt injection is using the prompting, the interaction, that natural language interaction or image-based interaction with a large language models to have it do something it's not supposed to, either expose a piece of information or go and turn something on or open up a port so that somebody can access your system. It's basically trying to get the model to do something it's not supposed to do. In most instances, that's giving too much agency to the model. If you think about the model as a new employee, I mean, let's break it down. If you think of the model as a new employee, they've just come into the company. Do you give them access to everything? No, you don't give them access to everything. You trust them gradually over time, as they demonstrate trust, as they demonstrate capacity to do tasks, you do that. We're not taking that approach with large language models, because vendors are telling everyone, hey, you give it access to all of the things, you give it access to all of the data, you give it access to all of the systems, it literally runs in root or God mode, and it will give you value for money. That's not entirely true. You can start small. You can start with very specific guardrails, so that if the prompt receives a malicious request to expose information, it either does not have access to this information or goes through additional steps without before exposing this information, where it asks the user for additional input. Do you actually want me to do this? There are guardrails that you can put in place to mitigate those concerns. The enemy of those guardrails is over-provisioning and an abundant amount of agency given to large language models, or agents for that matter.
Yes, okay. I mean, finally, the industry's built these, as you say, they've built these models so that they can take advantage of all the data that's out there. But is enough being done on the security side at the moment? Is security coming out of the industry, coming out of the vendors, is that being aligned with the pace of which AI models are being developed?
There is an inordinate amount of hype around what these models can do today.
Yes.
Not what these models are going to do for us 10 years down the line, but what these models can do today. There's a lot of hype around the risks that these models pose. They're not magic. They can't do everything and anything.
Yeah.
And if you've brought in a model from the outside and given it absolute access to your information, you're asking for trouble.
If I'm being
perfectly honest, it's like hiring an employee, and the first day of work, here's access to everything. Here's access to the vault. Here's access to the money. Here's access to all the computer systems. I'm going to go make myself a cup of coffee. You do work without any guidance or anything. So that's the analogy. And it's all about a gradual approach and adoption. Obviously, with all the hype, you get a lot of pressure. We speak to CIOs, we speak to CISOs, and they're under a substantial amount of pressure to adopt all things AI and to demonstrate that progression. You don't have to jump in with both legs. You yeah. want to take, you know, purposeful steps. You want to invest in these things and do some measure of ROI calculation. Because yes. at some point, your CFO is going to show up and say, hey, we're paying, you know, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 to be able to summarize meetings. Is that really value for money? So there's a lot of
presumably that's a lot more than you would pay a human being to do the same job.
Yes, absolutely. And even if you get better accuracy and faster results, is it worth it to the business? And so that's an important question a lot of people are now paying a lot more attention to. So, but from a security perspective, initially there was a challenge in understanding what is the technology, what is yes. it supposed to do, what yes. can it, what, how is it supposed to work, which is honestly very late, because if we're being honest with one another, AI has been around for the better part of the last decade. Traditional machine learning models and neural nets have been around for the better part of the last decade and have made their way into everything we use.
Yes.
They're in your malware detection. They're in your grammar checkers. It's not generative. It's just your run-of-the-mill AI. That was the term that was first coined in the 50s in Dartmouth and has been making our way in technology for years. Yes. Now, there's with the rise of generative AI, there's a focus on AI governance and AI security. And the larger part of the problem isn't the generative component. It's the fact that now that there's a focus on AI security and AI governance, everyone is looking around and discovering that, oh my God, there's AI everywhere.
Yes.
And I have to start paying attention to all of these moving parts. And it's not like CISOs had an abundant amount of time and resources to begin with. And now they're having to deal with those things. So it's a shift. But when we speak to clients, when I speak to CISOs, I say you have to take a risk-based approach, just like with everything else.
Yes.
Not every bit of AI operating in your environment is a critical component, is high risk.
Mm-hmm.
Malware detection is not high risk.
Of course, yeah.
Spell checking is not high risk. If you're using AI to hire people, that's probably an area you want to pay attention to.
Yes,
if you're using AI to have safety components in your factory, to monitor safety components in your factory, you may want to pay more attention to them.
Yes, definitely.
Because if they don't work, you miss out on good employees. You get sued.
Yes.
And if they don't work in the factory, really bad things can happen.
Yes.
People can get hurt en masse. So taking a risk-based approach to, okay, where are the areas that have a high impact? Are we using AI in those areas? And then approaching those step by step by step is the best piece of advice I can give someone. Don't boil the AI ocean.
Yes,
we need to pay attention to this, but let's deal with it like everything else in a risk-based approach.
Okay, Nader. Well, I'll take that last point. Don't boil the AI ocean. And let's... say thank you very much. Thank you so much for taking part in today's interview. It's been lovely talking to you and taking your advice. Let's not boil the AI ocean. Goodbye.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you. Bye.